Hey, you guys, we're doing another Flickers of Fear, my movie review show. So here's a movie. This was recommended to me by at least two or three listeners. After watching it, I can totally see why it was recommended to me, because this movie, which is called The Clove Hitch Killer and came out in 2018, is very, very obviously based on BTK, aka Dennis Rader, who obviously we talk about a lot on our show. It's a fictional movie, but the killer in it is actually pretty clearly based on Dennis Rader, even though weirdly, like a lot of the reviews of it don't really mention that. I think on Decider it mentioned it. You know, the guy that wrote the screenplay, whose name was Christopher Ford, and the director of it, Duncan Skiles, I think his name is, they very specifically said they were fascinated by the BTK killer and wanted to kind of make a movie exploring maybe the family dynamic of what was going on with that, which is something that I'm kind of interested in because I've always kind of wondered that as well, particularly, you know, with these serial killers that have seemingly normal family lives, as Dennis Rader seemed to, and also serial killers that stopped for a really long time. So that's another thing that this movie explores. Now, this movie is on, it's pretty much on, you know, any major streaming service you want to name. I watched it on Hulu, but then I discovered it's also on Netflix, at least in the US, and pretty sure it's on Amazon Prime as well. So there's lots and lots of places you can watch it, and I actually really would recommend it. It seems like most of the reviews of it seem like they're really positive. Like I saw a lot of really positive reviews of it, but then there was some people that really, really didn't like it. They thought it was too boring or too slow or too unbelievable or various other things. Like for whatever reason, they didn't really like it. But I don't know. I thought this was like a really, really good film. And it's not maybe what you're expecting when you think, oh, it's a serial killer movie. It's not about, you know, like a cop chasing a serial killer, but you know, we've seen that before. It's not really about the serial killer, you know, trying to get inside his head or anything like that. We've had a lot of movies like that too. This one's doing something a little bit different, which I thought was really intriguing. Now, is it a horror movie? Sort of. It's like psychological horror. I would probably call it more like a thriller or a mystery or, you know, maybe a horror-tinged drama, if that doesn't sound too weird. But it's like there's not a lot of violence in it. You don't even really see the serial killer in the movie, the Clove Hitch killer. You don't even really see him, you know, attacking a victim until almost the end. Well, actually, I guess it's sort of like toward the end of the middle, or I don't know if that makes any sense. This also does something really interesting. It kind of goes in a direction you don't expect, leaves some ambiguity for a while, so you're almost kind of thinking, oh, maybe it's not going to go. And it goes in a lot of directions that I wasn't expecting it to go in, which I really, really liked. So, what the story behind this is, there's this tiny, tiny little town in Kentucky called Clarksville, and it's this really, really small, super, super religious, super conservative town. I kind of feel like I don't know if this movie is set nowadays because it was hard to tell because this was such a tiny, like backwards little town, so it could have been, you know, it could have been the 90s, it could have been now, I don't really know. But because the main teenager character, his cell phone was like a flip phone, which made me think it was maybe the 90s or the early 2000s. But then his friend, she had like a slightly more modern cell phone, so maybe it was sort of now. It doesn't really matter, but I'm just saying that it was kind of hard to tell because the town was so small and so insular, and you know, so I couldn't really tell like when it was supposed to be going on. And maybe they just gave the kid this really, really old cell phone so he wouldn't be tempted to like look at porn or whatever. So this family is the Burnsides, and they're a very you know, very, very religious, very conservative family. Basically, you can't swear, you can't even drink soda, you know, everything is just very, and their whole lives pretty much revolve around the church, and the Boy Scouts, or whatever this movie's equivalent of the Boy Scouts is. I think it's called the Order of Light, which I guess is maybe more I don't know if they're supposed to be actual Boy Scouts or if it's just kind of like an even more Christian Boy Scouts. I'm not really sure. But so the main character is named Tyler, and he's a 16-year-old boy. It should be noted that in this town of Clarksville, Kentucky, there was 10 years ago, there was a series of murders that were undertaken by a dude only known as the Clove Hitch Killer. I believe it was 13 women that were killed. And if you know anything about the BTK case, they were killed very much like BTK's victims were. They were not raped, But they were, you know, the perpetrator would break into their house and would tie them up, hog tie them, and you know, usually strangle them or suffocate them by putting a bag over their head or something like that. So a lot of women were killed, and they never solved it. And 10 years went by, and there haven't been any new ones. So Tyler, he's in the Boy Scouts. His dad, Don Burnside, played by Dylan McDermott, who is actually really brilliant in this. He's playing this kind of like Ned Flanders-y. He's not that over the top, but he's just kind of like the dorky, you know, super Christian dad. And he, you know, he tells stupid dad jokes, and he's just very like, you know, he's very much like that. But because you know that probably he's a serial killer, it kind of lends that performance like a real sinister edge, which I think was like really well done. So Dylan McDermott is like fucking great in this. So Tyler, you know, everybody kind of knows about the murders because they still have a vigil, you know, every year for the victims or whatever. But there really hasn't been any movement on the case in 10 years, and the killer has not struck again in all that time. So Tyler, as it happens, has this kind of crush on a girl in his class, and he's gonna sneak out and pick her up. Now, when he sneaks out to pick her up, he basically steals his dad's truck. Like, his dad, Don, is a, I think he's a handyman. And so he's got like the magnets on the side of his work truck or whatever. So Tyler like takes the magnets off and goes and picks up the girl. And then they go to the car and they're going to make out or whatever. And in the process of the pre-makeout session, the girl, I can't remember what her character's name was. She's not in it very much, but she finds this kind of torn magazine picture, like underneath the passenger seat, I think it is, of a woman in bondage. Like she's all tied up. She has a ball gag or whatever. Now, because Tyler has, perhaps unwisely, told this girl that this is his truck and not his dad's truck, the girl thinks that the picture belongs to him. And since she's also like a super, super conservative Christian, where it's like, you know, no porn allowed, no gay people allowed, no nothing, nothing, she is very, very offended by this. And he's like, hey, it's not mine. She doesn't believe him. And like an asshole, basically, the next day, she tells everybody. Well, she says she tells one person that, oh, I went out with this Tyler dude and I found this like creepy shit in his car. Like, I found this porn in his car and he's a perv. And then it gets around the whole school that he's a perv, you know. So now his friends won't hang out with him anymore. So he is essentially ostracized because of this one picture, which isn't even his. So these are the kinds of people that you're dealing with in this movie, which I know are, but there are real people like this, but you know what I mean? So, but it's interesting, like, because like I said, BTK, you know, also was a leader in the church and also was, you know, a Boy Scout, like a, you know, Boy Scout leader or whatever. So, you know, pretty obviously, you know, Don Burnside in this is based off of him very, very strongly, you know, and he also had a wife and kids and a normal life and nobody suspected anything. And he also took a break for a really long time. So that's kind of what's going on here. So because Tyler you know, found this thing, like that they found his thing in this in his dad's truck, he gets like really, really not suspicious immediately. He's just kind of like, I wonder why I didn't know dad was into that kind of stuff, because you know, this family is just like ridiculously wholesome, but all but in a real like kind of creepy way. You know what I mean? So he starts thinking, I wonder if he's got more stuff. I don't know if he's just like looking for more porn or if it's already in the back of his mind that maybe there's something more sinister going on. But he knows that his dad, he has this shed in the backyard that he's always kind of hanging out in, and it's always locked, like with a padlock. Now, the mom is kind of like oblivious. She's just like in there cutting coupons. So your dad has his hobbies or whatever. And it's like, yeah, he certainly does. That's for sure. So Tyler figures out the combination of the you know, the lock that's on the shed, and he goes in there, and underneath a floorboard he finds this box that has some bondage magazines in it, which, you know, whatever. And it's like he's shocked, but he's a 16-year-old super Christian kid from Kentucky, so he's shocked about that. But the thing that makes him maybe think that there's something worse going on is at the very bottom of this box, he finds a Polaroid picture of a tied up middle-aged woman who looks pretty scared, and someone has written on this Polaroid picture, Lucky's favorite, Nora. Now, at this point, he starts to suspect, hey, maybe my dad is the Clove Hitch killer who they never caught. So he does a little bit of a web search, sneaking, because he's also not allowed to go on the internet because, you know, porn. So he goes down in the middle of the night and like sneaks around, and he finds out that indeed one of the Clove Hitch killer's victims was named Nora Devlin. And the pictures of the woman look very much like the picture that he found in his dad's shed. Now, at this point, like I said, I don't know if I really want to spoil this because I do want people to watch it. But if I don't spoil it, then I can't really talk that much more about it. So maybe I will. So if you don't want to know what happens in this, or like what happens toward the middle and the end, then maybe click off and go watch the movie. Like I said, it's everywhere. It's on Hulu. It's on Netflix. It's on Amazon Prime. It's all over the place. So you can watch it and then come back and, you know, we'll kind of discuss what's going on in the shit. But like I said, it's really hard to talk about any farther than that without saying, like, you know, what twists and turns that it takes. Because I think that's one of the things that I liked the best about it, was that it did some unexpected things with the serial killer mythology, or what you would do if you suspected that your dad was a serial killer. Because this is something I've always kind of wondered about. And I think we talked about it on our BTK show, and we've talked about it on other serial killer shows. Serial killers that have, you know, supposedly normal family lives and jobs and stuff like that, and no one suspects them, and they do it for decades and decades. That's really fascinating to me, because I cannot imagine what it would be like to find out that you'd been, you know, married to this dude for 30 years, or, you know, this dude had been your dad for 16 years and you never suspected anything, and then you found out that he was a serial killer. I just can't imagine what that would do to your life. You know what I mean? So I think that was a really cool thing to like explore in this movie. So at this point, I should note that Tyler, because he was ostracized by all his horribly uptight, judgmental, asshole friends, because now they all think he's a perv because they thought that S&M picture was his. He is kind of hanging out with the weird girl, who is really not all that weird. She's just super into true crime and she's not religious. So that basically makes her like witch, you know what I mean, in this town, pretty much. So he starts hanging out with her, and it turns out that she is actually fascinated by the Clove Hitch killer. And because she lives with this older woman that was, I think she was like a journalist or an investigator on the case or something like that. So she has a lot of files on it. Now, you find out later on, and like I said, this is spoilers. So if you don't want anything to know, you know, if you don't want to know anything about the movie, I'm going to kind of spoil it from this point on. So this is kind of your final warning. But you find out later on, and you kind of suspect this pretty early in the movie, but you find out later on that this girl's mom was actually one of the Clove Hitch victims, because I think there ended up being more than the police like knew about. You know what I mean? So there's that whole thing. So that's why she's kind of obsessed with it. So when they work together, now, initially, when Tyler finds all this shit on his own, he's like, hey, I found this Polaroid picture. He tells to this, to the girl, whose name is Cassie, by the way. At first, she kind of like blows him off. And then like she goes over to dinner at their house, because there's this whole thing where he kind of gets busted, and like his dad is like, oh, he's got a girlfriend. And it's like, we have to meet her. So even though they're not boyfriend and girlfriend, which I really like that they didn't go that route. They didn't go like, oh, it's a teen romance type of thing. These two end up like working together, like to solve this mystery, to find out if his dad is really the Clove Hitch killer. But they don't, there's not like any romance between them really. It's like, they like each other, they're friends, but I kind of like that they didn't like shoehorn that in there. They're just kind of hanging out because they have a mutual interest, you know, and then they do like at the end, they do like really like look out for each other and shit like that. So obviously they care about each other, but it's like a friend thing, which I thought was kind of cool. So so Cassie comes over to dinner, and, you know, she makes kind of some jokes and about being a Wiccan and stuff like that, just to see what they'll do, which was a really, really funny scene. There's actually some really funny, like dark comedy in this, like it's not real overt. But a lot of the stuff that's kind of like situational, like I just found it really amusing, like especially Cassie's character, because she's kind of like a smartass, but not obnoxiously. So she just very straight faces like, yeah, I'm pretty much an atheist. I'm kind of like looking into Wicca maybe, and like all this other kind of stuff. And they're all kind of horrified, but trying like not to be horrified. So I think it's like really funny. But so after she comes over to the thing, and he's told her about the Polaroid, but then they're taking her home, and she's just kind of like, no, dude, your dad's not Clove Hitch. Come on. What ends up happening then is that because he had told her about the Polaroid, and because it said Lucky's favorite on it, She kind of goes back through her files because it's still kind of going around in the back of her head. And she comes out and she says, oh my God, some of the letters that this dude sent to the police and, you know, some of the stuff he left at the scene, he did like call himself lucky, or that word did come. So maybe you're onto something. So then they start delving farther into the mystery of if he really could be this serial killer who has not killed anybody for 10 years. Now, it's interesting because at one point you almost believe that maybe, because at one point, I mean, okay, so Don, the dad, he's not dumb. And he kind of twigs onto the fact that Tyler maybe found out some shit about him, because he for sure knows that he went into his shed. And so he just, you know, suspects that he probably saw at least some of the shit. So at first he tries to like blow it off with, oh, you know, it's dudes have these thoughts. We can't help it. It's, you know, it's porn and it's not, you know, as long as you don't do it in real life, it's not bad. So they have this like really, really awkward like sex talk. But then Don pretty much suspects that he's like, okay, well, my kid thinks I'm the killer now. So Tyler, I mean, he's a teenager, so he's not like super good at covering his tracks, I guess. So his dad is pretty much like, yeah, I think he's figured it out. So he takes Tyler on a camping trip. Now, at this point, I thought the dad was just going to like kill Tyler, or it was just going to become this kind of like cat and mouse kind of shit, like out in the woods or whatever. But that's not what happens, which is cool. Basically, what the dad does to try and, because I'm like, oh, well, I'd love to hear how he's going to get out of this one. But he says, oh, I'm not the Clove Hitch killer, but my brother, you know, Tyler's uncle, he's the Clove Hitch killer, and I'm trying to cover for him. Now, see, the brother was in a car accident 10 years ago and is basically in a vegetative state. He's in a wheelchair. He can't talk. It's not like he's in any position to say, hey, don't throw me under the bus. It's not me. So the fact that Don is like, no, it's my brother. I'm covering up for him because it would devastate the family. You know, the murder stopped because he, you know, he was in the accident and he became vegetative. And that's why. And it's like, I just didn't want anybody to know. And so at this point, he convinces Tyler of this because Tyler, I mean, obviously he doesn't want his dad to be the serial killer. And he's like, it's bad enough my uncle is the serial killer. But the dad convinces him, well, because we don't want anybody finding out about this, and you found, because they find another stash of stuff like farther down in the crawl space or whatever under the shed that actually has even more incriminating shit, as in like Polaroid pictures of women that kind of look, you know, they're all tied up and they kind of look dead. A whole bunch of driver's licenses of all the known victims, which, you know, not a good look. So basically the dad's like, well, let's just burn all the evidence. And Tyler does it because he really doesn't want to think that his dad is the serial killer. However, as time goes on, Tyler is basically kind of like, you know what? I think probably he is the serial killer. And spoiler alert, he does end up being the serial killer. Now, what this movie does, I guess, because Tyler figured out that his dad was Clove Hitch, Don decides, he's like, oh, well, I better get rid of all this evidence or the son, you know, or Tyler's going to like take it all to the cops and I'll be hosed. Now, because he destroyed all of his trophies, which I'm guessing were keeping him sustained for the past decade, and which is why he hadn't killed anyone since then. But because he doesn't have that stuff anymore, he starts getting that hankering to go out and kill a woman again. And so he starts stalking this other woman that he finds in the grocery store. Now, what you don't know, there's like one sequence and it's right near, it's past the middle, but it's kind of like heading toward like the final act or whatever. There's one point where he goes to this woman's house because he like stalks her for a couple days. By the way, I don't think I mentioned this, but they call him the Clove Hitch killer because he leaves a rope. That's like his favorite knot that he uses. But he also, his calling card is he leaves a rope that's tied in a clove hitch, like somewhere on the victim's property, like on the outside of their house or whatever. So he starts stalking this woman and he breaks into her house in the middle of the day. And he does essentially the same move as BTK used to do. He breaks into the house, you know, after stalking them for a few days and finding out like what their routine is or whatever, and when there's not going to be anyone else home. And then he breaks in the house and he says, I'm not going to hurt you. I just robbed a bank. I need your car keys or whatever, which was something that Dennis Rader did as well. So he does that, but then he takes the woman in the bedroom and basically like hog ties her. And then he starts to kill her, like put a, you know, put a bag over her head, and he starts taking Polaroid pictures. At which point his son Tyler comes into the bedroom with a rifle pointed at his dad's head. And then it fades to black. And then this confused me for a second. After it fades to black, because you don't know if he shot him or not, right? So then it seems like it, I guess it jumped back in time. Like I didn't get that at first. And I'm just sitting there going, wait, what's going on now? So it was a little confusing, but only for like a minute or two. Like after a while I figured out, oh, now we're going back in time to show what actually happened from Tyler's perspective instead of his dad's perspective. So turns out that this whole time that Don was stalking this woman, Tyler had pretended to go off to this Boy Scout leadership training seminar thing, like on the bus or whatever. So he was supposed to be out of town, but he faked it and he came back, and him and Cassie had been following Don around just to figure out, like, once and for all, if he's actually the serial killer. So they actually do end up saving the victim, because they come in the house, and there's like a really like tense scene toward the end where there was another scene too. And I was like, I was kind of like, oh man, please don't do this dumb shit. But then after I was like, oh wait, no, that was actually like pretty smart, because you get back. So you're seeing everything now from the point of view of Tyler and Cassie, who are stalking Don. You know what I mean? Cause you've seen everything from Don's point of view, you know, up to that point, like him stalking his next victim or whatever. So when they come in the house and Tyler has the gun pointing at him, and, you know, Cassie goes over and like gets the bag off the woman's head. She's still alive. And then Don is sitting there trying to convince Tyler to, like, you know, you're not going to shoot me, and this, it isn't how it looks. And he's trying to like rationalize it or whatever. And he's just like, you know, I always told you gun safety, you know, don't point a gun at anybody. You don't want to use it or anything like that. And it seems like he convinces Tyler to hand him the gun. And I was just like, don't do it, kid. Just shoot him in the face. Like, you know what I mean? It's like save everyone a lot of trouble. But it was genius, because he wanted to make absolutely, absolutely sure that his dad would have killed him. So he hands his dad the gun. But unbeknownst to his dad, that gun is not loaded. So the dad immediately points the gun at Tyler and pulls the trigger. So at which point Tyler knows, okay, my dad is the killer. He would have killed me if that gun had been loaded. But luckily I'm smart enough that I didn't load it. At which point Cassie knocks his ass out and they drag him out. And what they do is actually the ending, I feel like a lot of people really didn't like the way it ended. But I think that, and I can see why. But I think the ending totally goes along with the way that the characters have been built up to this point. Because the thing about it is that, so it ends with Cassie and Tyler taking the dad and, you know, because he's not dead, he's just knocked out. Like Cassie knocks him out with like a big heavy lamp or something. And then they drag him out to this camp, the campground where him and Tyler had gone previously. And they basically shoot him and make it look like a suicide, right? But for a long time, they don't find the body. So he's only like missing. I don't know exactly like how long he's missing. I think it's long enough that, you know, they set up like a little, you know, funeral thing or whatever. So it was like a week or whatever. But they find his body later and they're like, yeah, it looks like he committed suicide and his family's all broken up about it. But the thing about it is that Tyler, even though he could tell everybody that his dad was Clove Hitch and like, you know, everyone would figure it out and everything, but all the evidence is gone. So he essentially, the very last scene, which is actually great. And it's like him giving a sort of eulogy for his dad, like at this, you know, whatever it is. It's not a funeral, but it's kind of like a celebration of life doohickey or whatever. And the last thing, you know, he basically says, everyone saw a different side of him and all this other stuff that, you know, means something if you know that he was the serial killer, but doesn't mean anything to anybody else. And the last thing he says, if you can hear me, Dad, and then there's a big gap. And then he's like, I love you. And then it was the end. So he didn't tell anybody that his dad was Clove Hitch. No one had been killed, you know, in the previous 10 years. The woman, the last victim that they saved, hadn't seen his face because he had a mask on. Like I said, much like BTK used to do, he had kind of a ski mask or whatever. So she couldn't identify him either. So a lot of people, it seemed like people that didn't like the movie were mad because they thought, well, Tyler should have, one, he should have gone to the cops earlier, or two, he should have told everyone. But the thing about Tyler was that he didn't want, there's kind of an underlying theme in the movie. Not, I don't know if I'd call it, it's kind of like a little sub theme, maybe. It's not like overdone or anything. There's a little thing in the movie about rumors and how rumors about people can ruin their lives. Like the rumors about him being a perv because the picture that was found in the truck, which wasn't even his, but because this one girl wanted to be a twunt about it and told everybody, and then everybody at school like ostracized him because they thought he was all into fucking bondage or whatever, which wasn't okay in this town. And there were also rumors going around about Cassie that she was real slutty or she was like a weirdo or something like that, which also weren't true. So I think that one, I think that, you know, the fact that that had been gone into in the movie, I think that's why it ended the way it did, because Tyler understood the way that, you know, no, it wasn't a rumor that his dad was a serial killer. He was, but he knew that it would ruin the lives of his mother. You know, and he had a baby sister and, you know, and him, and it would ruin their lives. Like it would ruin the family's lives. And I guess he felt like, to what purpose? And you can agree with or disagree with that. It's like, if it was me, I totally would have said, yeah, he's a fucking serial killer. Like nobody should feel sorry that he's dead because fuck him. But in the context of the movie, I think it worked because that was kind of the type of character that he was. And that's absolutely what he would have done. Because I think that he was thinking about that him and his family still had to live in that town and that they wouldn't be able to after that, because even really minor shit, you know, would get you ostracized in this little, like really insular little town. So I think he just didn't want that to happen. Now you could say, on the other side of that coin, it's like, well, what about all the families of the victims? You know, don't they deserve any closure? Don't they deserve the case to be solved? And obviously, like I said, that's what I would lean toward. But as I said, in the context of his character, in the context of his movie, I think that was totally the way that it would have gone and the way that it should have gone. So I actually quite liked the ending, even though it was, you know, even though it was personally frustrating, because I was just kind of like, I'd have been up there being like, hey, that killer. You know what I mean? But I can see why they didn't do that. But yeah, so if you like serial killer movies, as I said, this is not, it's not super violent. It's not, you don't really see, you actually don't even see him kill anybody. You see him do like an attack and he ties the woman up and it's like horrific and stuff. But you don't, you know, it's not a serial killer movie in the sense that it's like a biopic. It's kind of more exploring, you know, it's kind of more from the kid's point of view and their, you know, they're kind of like in investigation into his secrecy and in his background and the whole family dynamic of what would happen if you found out that your dad was a serial killer. So it's kind of much more, comes at it from a lot more like psychological and much more drama perspective than sort of a, you know, a more horror perspective, if that makes any sense. And I've seen some people, I was watching Red Letter Media's did a little breakdown of this too, and they actually kind of compared it to a little bit of a David Fincher type of vibe, you know, like Zodiac or something like that, which it absolutely was. I think it really did have that. And I think the guy that made this movie is also like a big David Fincher fan, which you can see. This is actually the guy that directed it, Duncan Skiles. I believe this is his first feature length movie. I think he'd done some shorts and some other things prior to this, but he actually was fascinated by serial killers and he wanted to do a psychological exploration like this, not necessarily of the killer, but of the family surrounding it, of the community surrounding it, because there's a lot of that in it as well, and how it kind of affects the world outside of this killer, especially like an insular little world like this one, the family and the community and whatnot. But yeah, it's gotten mixed reviews, but if that sounds like something that you would like, I thought it was great. You know, all the performances were fantastic and it was just like a really fascinating look into the psychology of that, like I said, and because that's something that always interested me in real cases, like the BTK case, which, like I said, this mirrors very closely. So if that sounds like your cup of tea, then I would absolutely recommend it. As I said, it came out in 2018 and it's called The Clove Hitch Killer and it's on Hulu and Amazon, I believe, and it's also on Netflix. So check it out and let me know what you thought of it in the comments. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.